Good afternoon, everyone. We'll start. Let me welcome everyone, and really, it's great to see all the room completely filled, despite the incredibly good weather outside, but it's a little cooler inside, I guess. But it's a wonderful event, and I really want to thank all of you for joining us at this Forum on International Volunteering and Service, Research Findings and Policy Recommendations for a Service World. I'd like to thank David Caprara. He and his team, many others helped, but I think he deserves really special thanks. His energy has driven this forward. And this is an initiative which we're doing together, the Global Economy and Development Program at Brookings, with Washington University. And I want to maybe underline 2 points. One is this effort is, of course, an advocacy effort. It helps those who are out there, and we want to support them, get them all the support we can. But it's also a research effort, and that's, I think, particularly valuable in this area, and we're particularly happy in that sense to be working with Washington University Center for Social Development in convening this and in working on this. When I was heading UNDP, and I traveled all over the world, of course, visiting our offices, our projects, our activities, and I always met the volunteers, the UNVs, but also others, and I realized that at least UNDP could not have done its work worldwide without these volunteers. Their work, their energy, their interest, the ideas they brought, the team spirit, and the contacts were absolutely invaluable. I think to document this, to find data that show exactly how it works and why it works, why it's helpful, in what sense, if there are any problems, also to analyze these problems, is a very important activity. The second point I'd like to make this afternoon, and I hope that doesn't betray my age, is that, you know, communicating on Facebook and all that is great, and I'm it has to be done, and that's the new world. But communicating in person remains also very important. Actually being there, meeting people in person, working together in developing countries across the world, building the friendships face-to-face is really also very important. And for all the great benefits of modern technology, I don't think we can miss that. We have to still have that personal presence, that the kind of contact that cannot be replaced by other means. And I think international volunteering contributes a lot to building those bridges in person. We're extremely fortunate this afternoon to have a great panel, but we'll start with two keynote speakers. First, Mark Wrighton. Dr. Mark Wrighton is the Chancellor of Washington University in St. Louis. He has led by example in bringing together research and service, highlighting the importance of service to the academy. He started his career at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in 1972 as Assistant Professor of Chemistry, where he held the Frederick Keyes Chair in Chemistry. Wrighton was also named the Humanitarian of the Year 2000 by the Arthritis Foundation's Eastern Missouri Chapter and was selected as the 2007 St. Louis Citizen of the Year by the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. For his outstanding contributions to both Washington University and the St. Louis region, Wrighton was selected as the 2010 winner of the Right Arm of St. Louis Award, the most prestigious individual honor conferred by the St. Louis Regional Chamber and Growth Association. Thank you very much for joining us, Chancellor. And we're extremely fortunate to have our keynote speaker, also Ambassador Elizabeth Bagley, this afternoon, who is leading the International Volunteer Service to the spotlight, I think, in American foreign policy. Ambassador Bagley serves as the Special Representative for Global Partnerships in the Office of the Secretary of State. She also served as the Senior Advisor to Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. Prior to this appointment, she served as the U.S. Ambassador to Portugal, from where she received meritorious awards from the Portuguese Navy and Air Force, as well as the Grand Cross of Prince Henry the Navigator. Globalization started quite a few centuries ago. And it's the President of Portugal's highest civilian commendation. We are honored to have her at Brookings to address the next step in policy on international volunteering as one part of an overall approach to international cooperation in finding global solutions to conflict and unmet human needs. I must say, I very much always appreciate the way Secretary Clinton puts it. We don't want a multipolar world, we want a multi-partner world. And I think that there's a big difference between that. It conveys a very different message, and I'm really grateful for that message. So now I would like to invite Chancellor Ruyten to take the podium.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here. I am not, in point of fact, giving a keynote presentation. I'm giving my usual talk. The title is Remarks. Actually, I'm very interested in the subject of this particular meeting and very proud of Professor Amanda Moore McBride, the leader from Washington University in this effort. And we're very grateful to have the partnership with the Brookings Institution that I think can enhance the impact of the work that we're doing and provide important opportunities to benefit others. Some among you would know that Brookings Institution and Washington University have, in fact, a strong connection. We share the common benefactor, Robert S. Brookings. And, in fact, this institution in Washington, D.C. was founded, as I look at the history, to be the graduate arm for the social sciences for Washington University. That didn't turn out to be the case, as may be obvious to you, but this partnership has now been reaffirmed as of April of last year. Strobe Talbot and I engaged in conversation for a couple of years prior to signing a formal agreement to enter into a partnership. And today we have several elements of that partnership, including academic programs, internships, and leadership roles in connection with the Brookings Center for Executive Education. This is a vital activity for us and one that I think will grow with time as we have a large number of faculty and students who are very interested in issues that Brookings is going to be involved with in the next era. This particular partnership, Global Economy and Development, and our Center for Social Development at Washington University precedes, in fact, this renewed formal partnership between the university and Brookings. This, in fact, began in 2006 and is intended to study the effects of international volunteer service. The Center for Social Development at Washington University is one of the leading centers of its kind. Michael Sheradin is its leader, and I'm pleased to note to you that he was named one of Time's 100 most influential people in the world. This center focuses on research related to volunteer service, including national service and international service, and Amanda Moore McBride leads this particular component of the center's work. I'd also like to note that Amanda is the director of the Richard A. Gephardt Institute for Public Service, a new entity that was formed on the occasion of the retirement of Congressman Richard Gephardt, who served us extraordinarily well from the St. Louis region and is a national leader. He's been quite an inspiration in connection with this development. And today, literally hundreds of students and staff members at Washington University are involved in public service through the Gephardt Institute. I'd also like to note that a few years back, we created the Robert S. Brookings Fellowship with an endowment, and that endowment has been extended to Professor Amanda Moore McBride to support the programs of the Gephardt Institute. But back in 2006, there was a bit of serendipity at play. The Center for Social Development had just hosted an international conference in London to advance a research agenda on international service. The conclusion was that a research project was needed to assess the relative contribution of different types of international service to a range of outcomes for volunteers, host organizations, and the communities being served. Late that same year, the Brookings Initiative on International Volunteering and Service hosted a similar meeting right here in Washington, and the conclusion was the same. And so this partnership was born now about 4 years ago. Through the Brookings Initiative on International Volunteering and Service, and with funding from the Ford Foundation and the Brookings Washington University Academic Venture Capital Fund, That's a resource that we have put together to support these initiatives. The Center for Social Development has implemented quasi-experimental studies to assess perceived impacts of international service by volunteers, host organizations, and beneficiaries. The initial results are what you're going to be hearing about today. As Chancellor at Washington University, I've been very interested myself in building partnerships with leading universities around the world. Our lead initiative, in fact, in this regard, is called the McDonnell International Scholars Academy. It brings us into partnership with 25 premier research institutions around the world. Many of them are in Asia, but we include Latin America, the Middle East, and Europe. These programs are very interesting, and in interacting with these institutions around the world, I find young people with some common attributes. Of course, there's a degree of idealism, certainly a great deal of energy. But when I interact with these young people in all of our partner institutions, I find intense interest in issues related to energy and environment. Indeed, we have a major initiative related to those themes. But I also find that young people everywhere are wanting to make the world a better place. They want to leave a legacy. And I believe this effort in international volunteering is going to be a very important opportunity as we extend our reach around the world. I believe strongly that the model of partnership is the one that will prove most rewarding as we look ahead. The partnership that we have with the Brookings Institution, I know, will be very rewarding in many dimensions, and I'm grateful to have the opportunity today to be here to learn about the research results that have been obtained and to hear from some outstanding presenters. I'm especially pleased that we have Ambassador Begley with us this afternoon and look forward to her keynote presentation and would like to invite her forward now for that presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chancellor Heitner. This is a keynote, actually, which is what I was told to do, so I will be speaking from notes. But first of all, I wanted to thank you, Chancellor Wright, for all that you are doing and continue to do at the University, Washington University, WashU, I guess they call it. I was there, actually, for I think it was a debate with John Kerry and then President Bush a while back. But it's a fabulous, wonderful place. I know it has a great reputation, and I know your work is superb. And Amanda Moore McBride also, who is here, and I thank you for all your great research and your ongoing work in this area. Also to Kamal Dervis, Vice President and Director for Global Economy and Development. Is this on? I hope it's on. And to John Bridgeland, the CEO of Civic Enterprises, Stan Litow, and Diane Melly of IBM, whom we met with the other day, Michelle Nunn of Points of Light Institute, Steve Rosenthal, Executive Director of Cross-Cultural Solutions, who's here, Chair of the Building Bridges Coalition. I want to say a little something about Steve that's personal. My daughter has just gone to Bagamoyo, Tanzania, as part of Cross Cultural Solutions, and she has been emailing me for the last 3 days talking about this incredible experience that to her is already just life-changing. She's connected with an NGO called UKUN, U-K-U-N, and they visit HIV/AIDS patients in their homes, and then they have also cultural programs in the afternoon. She's learning Swahili somehow, really, it's an amazing, and I'm the first one who can vouch for it already that it has changed your life. So I thank you, Steve, wherever you are, for everything you're doing and around the world, not just in Tanzania. Of course, I want to thank David Caprara, who is our the true guiding light along this path that Brookings has pioneered through the Building Bridges Coalition, as well as a person who is responsible for all of us here today. And finally, it's wonderful to see my dear friend, Harris Wofford, Senator Harris Wofford, who I admire so greatly and who has been such a leader on making America's spirit of service a hallmark of his own career and the legacy that he's left us. by beginning with Sergeant Shriver starting the Peace Corps many years ago. So you truly deserve a round of applause, and I want to thank you. Without you and your work, America's example of service abroad would not be what it is today. If President Kennedy hadn't given that 2 a.m. speech at the University of Michigan, the lives of nearly 200,000 Americans who have responded to this enduring challenge would be markedly different. And so, too, with the lives of the millions who they have touched with their example of service. When I think about what it means to be the best type of diplomat, the type of person who represents what America stands for, what we believe in, and what we do when we are at our best, I think of national service. I think of the AmeriCorps volunteers and Coast Guard officers helping in the Gulf at this very moment, or our incredible Peace Corps volunteers and USAID professionals working day and night in Haiti. I also think of the hundreds in our diplomatic corps who sacrifice their time, energy, and really their entire lives to live abroad and to represent our country. Americans all over the world are going above and beyond the call of duty in order to help the common good. Here at home, the fabric of our communities is woven together not just by governments, but by community centers, churches, and nonprofits. Even with all of the demands on our daily lives, we still give. We Americans still make time to volunteer, and we always find new ways to serve others. More than 63.4 million Americans volunteered in 2009, giving 8.1 billion hours of volunteer service, worth an estimated $169 billion, demonstrating America's spirit of generosity at its best. And as we all know, this has not been an easy year. This has been a year of struggle, where people have been out of work, where families have been strained, where many throughout this country have gone from interview to interview, job to job, with nothing to show for it. But they still find time to serve this nation and to help others. The number of Americans volunteering in their communities jumped by 1.6 million last year, the largest increase in 6 years, according to the 2010 Volunteering in America report that's recently released by the Corporation for National and Community Service. As leaders in foreign affairs from both the public and private sectors, we're gathered here today to discuss new possibilities for Americans to serve all around the world. So to all of our hosts, thank you for providing me with this opportunity. President Obama believes, as I do, that citizen service is essential to solving the big problems facing our nation, from poverty and high employment and unemployment at home to the myriad of challenges we face abroad. But service cannot just be about counting the hours. It must be about lowering the dropout rate at home, even while we use new technology to make our schools more global. It must be about eradicating poverty abroad while moving people from the unemployment line to the dignity of work at home. In short, service must be about making a real difference throughout our interconnected world, and will take all of us to achieve our goals on each of these fronts. In the same way that Secretary Clinton once said that it takes a village to raise a child, we are now realizing that we must apply a similar approach worldwide. It takes a shared global response to meet the shared global challenges we face. We are all interconnected. No one government can address our world's challenges alone. No group of world leaders could possibly come together and concoct the right solutions for any of the unprecedented challenges our world is facing. And since all of these issues are interconnected, so too must our response be integrated and coordinated. The President likes to refer to Martin Luther King's statement that our fates are tied up in a single garment of destiny. And the best way to strengthen that fabric is to build new partnerships among government, the private sector, civil society, philanthropies, faith-based communities, diaspora groups, and everyday citizens in order to solve our shared problems. In this spirit, I gratefully receive your report, Service World Strategies for the Future of International Volunteer Service, on behalf of the Secretary of State and the President. Over the next few minutes, I'd like to provide a few reflections on the Obama administration's work in this arena. Let me start by saying that while we were talking about service, we also want to make sure that this is not just about serving your country out of beneficence. It should also directly involve your core competencies. Otherwise, it's not sustainable, as all of you know. If you're a business, do it because of your bottom line and because it is sustainable and the right thing to do. Your future markets are going to be in India, Indonesia, China, even Malawi. You're serving our world by doing what you do best, by creating jobs. But we must make sure that those jobs are created using sustainable business practices that are smart in terms of both equity and economics. If you're a foundation, do it because it is what drives your work and what your donors will celebrate and come back to support for again for having done. It's the same for any group in this room. But regardless of why we are here and who happens to write our check, we must find where our work overlaps and how we can achieve mutual goals together. In particular, there are three areas that I would like to focus on today, which are international corporate volunteerism, interfaith volunteerism, and diaspora volunteerism. First, on international corporate volunteerism. These are programs where an individual will be taken off their normal duties to serve abroad in a disaster situation or to help develop a new business line in an emerging market or perhaps to work with an NGO full-time to enhance its work. And IBM knows this very well. They have an amazing program, as well as Dow and many others. In some cases, they're doing all of these. They're developing goodwill by helping develop an economy, which will grow one day into business opportunities. They do so for a number of reasons, ranging from good PR to corporate social responsibility, to building relationships that lead to new market advantage, to professional development in the global economy of the future for their businesses. According to the Committee Encouraging Corporate Philanthropy's 2008 report, over 40% of major corporations now currently support formal international volunteer efforts for their employees. Yet these companies often develop relationships with their partner organizations in an ad hoc and unplanned manner. That is why President Obama called for the creation of a new core of business volunteers in his Cairo speech in June of 2009 to help facilitate more strategic, higher impact volunteer partnerships that better align with our foreign policy aims. Businesses will likewise benefit from the new partnership's ability to match companies with volunteer opportunities, to lower transaction costs and ease administrative hurdles, and provide the due diligence that could catalyze other partnerships and bring existing initiatives to scale. We are continuing to build out this initiative, and we continue to seek your input. But through dozens of listening sessions and consultations over the last year, we have also learned just how many businesses are working on corporate volunteerism because it is good for the companies where they operate, it is good for their employees, and it is good for their business. There are many impressive models, from Accenture Development Partners to IBM Corporate Service Corps to the work that Dow has been pioneering with their Global Sustainability Action Network. So today I call on you to come together, all of the businesses represented here and all of those whom we know, to develop a statement of principles for global corporate service fellowships that everyone can unite behind. Then map the activities that you are doing, and we will help you. We are engaged in a whole mapping process from businesses, corporations, to foundations, to NGOs. And we will convene partners for you so we can all catalyze more of this great work in a more coordinated fashion. This is the business volunteer corps model of the future, where the United States government does what we can to encourage these kinds of activities through the strength of our 180 embassies. And otherwise, we stay out of your way. But the embassies are really, and I've just spoken to a group of ambassadors going out to their respective embassies and told them how, not only how I envy them going, because as a former ambassador, I know how exciting it can be and what a great challenge and opportunity it is for them, but also to be able to work not just with governments. And I encourage them to go out to the private sector, to work with corporations, to work with NGOs, to look at ways in which we can partner together with the private sector, from faith-based communities to diaspora, and to come back when they are coming back to this country to go and talk to the diasporas, and if they're in India, to go to the Indian diaspora here, to search and look out for those who are in this country looking to their country. So it can be a mutually symbiotic relationship, and one that I hope will be a legacy of this administration. It's crucial that this effort becomes a win-win for all partners. International corporate volunteerism is based on business imperatives, including leadership development and a more cross-cultural skill set among employees working in a globalized world, gaining first-mover advantages in new markets and building relationships with future clients. This program will bolster foreign policy aims by leveraging resources for higher development impact, encourage people-to-people service for better diplomacy, and advance positive perceptions of America. Second, I'd also like to address interfaith volunteerism. Domestically, over one-third of all of our volunteers serve through religious organizations. We engage religious groups all the time. The U.S. government often engages religious communities, their related specialized agencies, and interreligious organizations to work together to address specific concrete challenges. In fact, one-quarter of our partners for the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, known as PEPFAR, are faith-based groups. And two-fifths of all U.S. private philanthropy directed at the developing world comes from religious organizations. There are many major advantages to partnerships that involve religious communities because they draw on the impulses for the common good, anchored deeply in a variety of religious and civic philanthropic motivations. In essence, we are pursuing together what former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright described with these words: to lead internationally, American policymakers must learn as much as possible about religion and then incorporate that knowledge in their strategies to take fully into account the immense power of religion to influence how people think, feel, and act. In this context, interfaith service means working for the common good, even while maintaining the unique religious identity of each participating partner. And as the President's Advisory Council for Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships recommended, we will be expanding our work in interfaith service over the coming years. It is especially important because of the youth bulge, which we particularly see in the Middle East. We're in places like Yemen, 75% of the population is under the age of 25, and where unemployment is already around 40%. Our generation has many problems in terms of religion as a negative force in the world. Extremists from every faith threaten peaceful coexistence and cooperation, as you all know. Muslims, yes, also radicals from Christianity and other backgrounds. And so today, I would call on all of you, again, to consider interfaith service as a particular place to focus our efforts. I ask that you consider interfaith service, not just dialogue and tolerance, but cooperation and understanding, as a place where you will spend your time, invest your resources, and commit yourselves so that the young people who are growing up today will find themselves in a world where faith is a positive force in our world, which brings us together rather than leads to misunderstanding, distrust, and destruction. Third and finally, I want to touch on diaspora volunteerism, which I mentioned already. The State Department currently engages in a variety of activities to reach out to diaspora communities, and this is a new initiative of this administration. These efforts keep communities informed about U.S. foreign policy, consular activities, news, opportunities for the diaspora to make meaningful contributions to the countries with which they are connected. State Department outreach activities with diasporas include cultural engagement, disaster and crisis assistance, faith-based engagement, and diaspora-oriented partnerships. And that is the mandate of our new office to increase this dialogue. We believe that the Department can improve its outreach going forward by cataloging and streamlining its efforts, educating everyone throughout our department about the value of diaspora engagement and bringing diaspora groups together to showcase best practices and to build capacity. Along with the Foreign Service Institute, FSI, we've already co-sponsored a diaspora seminar and workshop in January of 2010 with a focus on engaging diaspora communities from countries covered by the Western Hemisphere, South Central Asia, and Africa. a similar seminar and workshop focusing on countries covered by East Asia and the Pacific, Europe, and Near East Affairs Regional Bureaus will take place July 8th at Maine State. And it's been very successful. We've taken all the six regional bureaus and invited the desk officers from each to give them examples, of course, of their own diaspora, to give them, show them best practices, and to engage with them on how better they can communicate and engage with their particular diaspora communities. Today, I'm proud to announce that, led by our office, the State Department will be hosting a Diplomacy, Diaspora, and Development Conference this fall, where we will discuss diaspora engagement in terms of economic investment, entrepreneurship, philanthropy, knowledge transfer, youth outreach, and peace building. I invite all of you to participate in this breakthrough event and how we can engage diaspora communities in activities ranging from foreign direct investment, remittances, and, of course, international volunteer service. We must work together on each of these areas, corporate volunteerism, interfaith service, and diaspora engagement. When John F. Kennedy set up the Peace Corps, the official proclamation read in part, and I quote, "Our Peace Corps is not designed as an instrument of diplomacy or propaganda or ideological conflict. It is designed to permit our people to exercise more fully their responsibilities in the great common cause of world development." May this be our calling and our cause in the years ahead as well, as we seek ways for our service to match what we do best, our core competencies. I hope we will all be inspired by the work of the Service World Coalition by committing to a new generation of service. And as we recommit ourselves, I hope that we can continue to develop new ways for the American people to serve our nation by serving our world, whether during a six-month business volunteer experience, or as a part of serving their diaspora communities, or through interactions across all boundaries, beliefs, and backgrounds. I welcome the opportunity to work with all of you as we embark on this journey together. And I thank you for your time, for your vision for tomorrow, and for your continued service to our nation and our world. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks. For the keynote and for your introductory remarks. Chancellor Wrighton, could you perhaps share some of your experiences in terms of cooperation with universities around the world? You mentioned our very strong and good relationship between your university and Brookings, but I'm sure you've had a lot of experience working with other universities in the U.S. and worldwide. How does that fit into today's topic?
Young people in America are very interested in the communities around them and also very interested in volunteer service internationally. Sometimes I wonder, you know, what's the enthusiasm for going abroad to overcome poverty when we have that challenge right in our own region? In Missouri, for example, we face challenges in the city of St. Louis, urban challenges. And we face the challenge of a rural community that has major health problems, unemployment. But I think we need to respond to the interests of the students where they are. As I travel around the world and interact with young people in other cultures, I find that they, too, face this interest in being involved in their community. If you go to virtually any academic institution in America, you'll see bulletin boards plastered with opportunities and events and programs. And interestingly, when you go to universities in major cities with premier universities, you'll see bulletin boards plastered with information about what the students can be involved in. And what we're striving to do is to build a network of institutions with a keen interest in bringing about cooperative efforts, whether it's addressing environmental challenges or dealing with public health issues or overcoming poverty. I think it's a great opportunity because working with young people with enthusiasm, with energy, and high intellectual ability, we have a great chance to do something very special.
Thank you very much. Could you maybe add a few words on just your last sentence, you know, intellectual ability and service. How does it go together? Does it sometimes, I mean, there's a create a time conflict, you know, at the end of the day, there are only 24 hours in the day. What's your experience with, you know, with kind of making it mutually supportive, so to speak?
Well, that 24 hours is, of course,
this
is a limitation. Former president of MIT, Paul Gray, had a very good line about this. There are only 24 hours in a day, but then there are nights. And I think it's amazing to me what young people are able to squeeze in to their 24-hour day. And I do believe that knowledge that they're garnering through their formal educational programs is something that they want to take and apply. The theory is good and rewarding, but I think more people want to really do something. And universities have a responsibility to prepare people for global leadership. And we know that we are in an interdependent world today. And I believe that we have a responsibility domestically. And we find that, at least at the institutions we're working with, which are some of the best in the world, very talented people want to spend time on these volunteer activities also.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Ambassador Begley, you mentioned how important it is that capacity and knowledge is brought to bear. And I think that follows on Chancellor Wrighton's remark. Could you maybe elaborate a little bit on that and maybe also add a few more words on how you reminded us that this is, of course, not new in American tradition. Mm-hmm. Service and volunteering is a very important part of American society, the Peace Corps and all that. How does it interact with the more traditional conduct of diplomacy in your experience? How do they kind of talk to each other, help each other?
I think Harris Wofford probably knows better than anyone in terms of the Peace Corps. I mean, I think the idea behind the Peace Corps was a group of civic volunteers who were not connected, who were Americans but not necessarily, you know, connected to the work of the government. And sometimes it works better because sometimes our government is not seen as benignly as we think it should be, or depending on the country. Also, it's why the faith-based communities are so important, because when meeting with the leaders of the faith-based council that the White House put together, they really beseeched me, and you know, as a representative of the government, to use them more, because they are there in places where we as government employees or representative of the government often can't go. They understand the people on the ground. They've worked with them, and they are seen and trusted by the people on the ground. So I think it goes to the point of the Peace Corps. They're there to help. They're there not to be pushing American foreign policy or, you know, imposing their will. They're there to learn just like cross-cultural solutions, to learn, to be there, to work for 2 years, to, you know, devote their lives to understanding the culture, to be part embedded, if you will, into the culture, know the language, understand what they're doing, what the country needs, and be able to work with them on that. So I think we certainly have a role. Our embassies, our ambassadors have a role, but I also beseech them to be, you know, more sensitive in terms of, you know, working with private industry and on, you know, NGOs and even the Peace Corps in their areas, because these are people that they really need to listen to. They don't, you know, governments or ambassadors even, or, you know, political officers, when they're on the ground, they deal directly with the government. They don't always deal with the private sector, and I think that is a huge mistake, and one that we're trying to change. It's really changing the mentality of the State Department and the government itself into understanding that we can't do everything just government to government, that we have to, you know, encourage everyone, whether it's diaspora communities or faith-based communities or corporations or NGOs or foundations, all the myriad of organizations that are part of our world, And I think it's really important to know that, and it's something that the volunteerism is perfectly poised to do.
Yeah, I think international issues are too difficult for just governments. Many, many
even
actors
more.
Are needed. Mm-hmm. And I think your colleague Anne Mary Slaughter has written many books and articles on
connectedness,
how various networks and all contribute. Of course, government has to play a key role, has to continue to, because that's where the locus of both legitimacy, sovereign legitimacy, and power lies. But it's through all these channels that one can really help a lot. What about the business channel? Because the business channel you emphasized was your first topic, and it is hugely important. I mean, today, international business contributes by far more in terms of resources, technology transfer than the official sector. This wasn't the same 30, 40 years ago. And yet, there are controversies. I mean, after all, business, it wants to make a profit. How it makes that profit sometimes is controversial. Is there enough competition? How do you handle the tensions, fully agreeing that business is the strongest force for international development, but as we've seen even in the U.S., not without its problems?
Well, I think, Stan could probably answer this better. IBM. I'm not a business person. But I have seen, and I marvel, not having been really involved with corporations too much in my life. I've mostly been in government. But seeing the corporate social responsibility, which they don't even call anymore that, because what they do is they take their core competencies and they use them. And they have a business model, and it works so much better because they know what they're doing. They have the people on the ground, and they work with the NGOs or with the local people. That's part of their business. I mean, they train them, they need them as part of their business, and they need to also develop goodwill on the part of the country that they're working in. So, Pepsi and Coke are great examples in terms of water. At one point, they were water negative. They were taking water away from the countries that they were in, and now that they are, they're water positive. They're working to bring water back and to do Pepsi and Coke both huge projects on water, on seeding, on irrigation, on sanitation and hygiene. It's just one example of how the paradigm has shifted. They're looking to be more positive, and they want to have and they know that that's good for business as well.
Yeah.
So I think it works both
ways. I think
ways.
The interaction is so productive when business listens to civil society, gets that feedback, but civil society also gets the dose of realism and kind of strategic thinking that business has. The two together can create some amazing results. You're right. Well, thank you very much, Ambassador Begley.
Okay. Chancellor
Wright.
My pleasure. Thank you.
This was a great beginning. There'll be a panel now discussing the research results. But thank you so much for coming. And you see, the room is absolutely filled.
Amazing.
And we're also, of course, grateful for all of you who came to join us today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.